I want you to imagine just for a second that you've been tasked with painting a riot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, right. Like a brutal, violent, just deafening confrontation. You have to capture, the live fire, the choking clouds of tear gas, the heavy, crushing weight of heavily armored state riot police just bearing down on a desperate crowd.
That is an incredibly heavy visual.
It is. And if you had to put that reality onto a canvas, what medium would you actually reach for?
Well, probably something thick, like dark, heavy oils.
Exactly. You'd think of thick, aggressive, impasto strokes that literally jump off the canvas. Or, maybe you'd skip painting entirely and just go straight for gritty, high-contrast photojournalism to just
Yeah.
get the harsh truth.
Right.
But what if someone chose the exact opposite? What if an artist decided to document that terrifying concrete violence using, like, the most delicate, fragile, and totally uncontrollable medium in the visual arts? What if they use watercolor?
I mean, it sounds completely counterintuitive, almost absurd, honestly, at first glance, because you are taking the absolute maximum material vulnerability, literally just water and dissolved pigment, and trying to use it to portray the absolute maximum harshness of physical political reality.
Okay, let's unpack this because it is a massive paradox and it is the exact mission of our deep dive today.
Yes, it really is.
We are going to explore how aesthetic fragility confronts raw political violence. And we're doing this by looking at this really fascinating analytical debate centered on a specific piece of contemporary art.
It's a really incredible piece.
It is. It's a 2023 painting by Jairo Duque titled Arti en Resistencia. And here is the real kicker. It's a tiny, intimate piece, just 15 by 11 inches, done entirely in watercolor.
Wow, that's small.
Yeah, super small. Yet it drops us right into the middle of the April 2021 Colombian social uprising. Specifically, it places us right in the crosshairs of Bogota's Plaza de Bolívar.
And before we get into the brushstrokes, the fluid dynamics and the water itself, it is absolutely crucial to set the stage for you, the listener, because we have to understand what this painting actually represents historically. The 2021 protests in Colombia were not like just some minor disruption.
No, not at all.
This was a massive, intensely fraught, and really bloody moment in the country's modern history. We are talking about a nationwide social explosion.
Triggered initially by a proposed tax reform bill.
Yeah, exactly. During the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, no less. And it quickly morphed into this profound outcry against deep-seated economic inequality.
Right.
And it resulted in a severe militarized clash between the Colombian state forces and civilian protesters.
And ultimately, that social upheaval contributed to a major political shift in the country. It moved them away from the longstanding conservative era known as Uribismo, toward a new progressive government.
Exactly.
And look, because this painting deals with the very real, very bloody 2021 Colombian protests, which is a topic that still deeply, deeply divides the country politically today, we need to be incredibly clear with you right up front.
Yes, absolutely.
We are looking at this strictly through the lens of art and history. We are not here to pick political sides left or right, or to endorse any specific viewpoint.
Right, because lives were lost on those streets, and the historical interpretations of those weeks are still hotly debated.
Exactly. So our goal today is to impartially explore how an artist attempts to process and translate such a charged historical moment into a visual medium. We're exploring the themes and interpretations exactly as they are debated by art critics in our source material.
We are looking at how art processes history, not, telling you how to vote.
Exactly.
So we are examining the mechanics of the artwork, and the central debate surrounding this piece asks a really brilliant question about how we view contemporary political art in general.
Okay, what is it?
It asks, does this watercolor function purely as a blatant political declaration where the beauty is just a tool for propaganda, or does its true power actually lie in its independent aesthetic expression?
And to figure that out, I think we have to look at the physical reality of the painting itself. Like, we need to look at the physics of chaos.
Yes.
Because when you look at the composition of the painting, it sets up this brutal, unavoidable visual dichotomy. On the left side of the paper, you have the state forces.
The ES mat, right?
Exactly. In Colombia, this is the ES mat, the Mobile Anti-Riot Squad. And the artist doesn't paint them as individual human beings with faces or distinct features.
It's just a wall.
Yeah. They are rendered as this dark, rigid, robotic mass.
Yeah.
It's a literal impenetrable wall of black and gray armored shields.
And that lack of humanity in the brushstroke is such a deliberate, striking choice. It visually portrays the machinery of the state apparatus rather than the individuals within it.
Right.
But then on the right side of the composition, you have the total opposite. You have the light, you have the crowd of citizens.
But they aren't a solid block like the police.
No, not at all. The crowd is diffuse, open, heavily diluted by the water. Visually, it just perfectly represents the vulnerability of an unarmed citizenry.
But the medium itself is doing so much heavy lifting here, far beyond just, you know, light and dark paint.
Oh, absolutely.
The technical specs of this painting point out a tiny detail that completely changes how you understand the piece. It's painted on arches, cold-pressed paper.
Right.
But not just any standard watercolor paper.
Yeah.
It is 640-gram paper.
And that grammage is vital.
Yeah.
To give you some context, standard watercolor paper is often around, say, 300 grams. So a 640-gram paper is incredibly dense and thick.
It's cardboard almost.
Literally. It is practically the thickness of heavy cardboard.
Yeah.
And the main physical property of a cold-pressed paper that thick is its tooth. The microscopic texture on the surface, combined with an ability to take an immense amount of water without buckling or warping,
right,
allows the artist to literally flood the sheet with water.
Okay, so think of a 640-gram cold-pressed paper less like a standard canvas and more like a reinforced dam that is purposefully overwhelmed by a flood. Or like a sponge made of Kevlar.
I love that analogy. Kevlar sponge.
Right. Because a normal thin piece of paper would warp, it would wrinkle, and just kind of panic under a massive flood of water.
Mm-hmm.
It would lose its structural integrity completely.
Exactly.
But this 640-gram paper is built to take an immense amount of pressure. It absorbs the absolute chaos of a flood without losing its boundary. So the artist intentionally saturates this thick paper completely, drops the pigment in, and then purposely lets the water overwhelm the space. They surrender control.
And this is where we get into the fluid dynamics of watercolor, which is just fascinating. When you drop heavy pigments into a flood of water on textured paper, something called granulation happens.
Okay, what does that mean visually?
Well, heavy pigments, like the blacks and deep grays used for the riot police, they physically settle into the microscopic valleys of the paper. They look grounded, heavy, immovable.
Wow.
Meanwhile, the lighter washes used for the crowd literally float on top of the water, flowing completely uncontrollably.
That is incredible. So the physical loss of control on the paper perfectly mirrors the history it's depicting. The water floods the thick paper and dissolves the physical boundaries of the paint. Just as the boundaries of civil order dissolved into devastating violence on the streets during those protests.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sheer uncontrollable nature of the water actually becomes the true protagonist of the painting.
It really does. But there is a sharp debate about what that actually means.
Right.
One perspective looks at this uncontrolled flow of water and sees a beautiful aesthetic triumph. You know, the paint resisting the artist's control, creating these gorgeous organic blooms of color.
Right. The beauty of the medium.
Yeah, but the other side pushes back hard on that, pointing out that this physical loss of control left hundreds of real people dead or injured.
Wow, yeah.
When the overflowing water drags the black, heavy pigment of the riot shields across the page, bleeding into the lighter colors of the crowd, it isn't just a pretty artistic effect. It is the literal materialization of state violence. The political reality is operating within the actual physics of the watercolor.
It's a visceral translation of street violence into fluid dynamics. But, you know, looking at this watercolor, you'd think the artist was standing right there in the tear gas, dodging rubber bullets while frantically painting.
Right, you'd assume so.
But if we look at the date and location on the canvas, a completely different, almost uncomfortable reality emerges. We know how the painting was made physically, but we really need to talk about where and when it was made.
Right, because this was not painted in the middle of the protests in 2021.
No.
The technical notes for the artwork state that Jairo Duque painted this in 2023, 2 full years after the uprising had ended.
Okay.
And his studio, it wasn't in Bogota or Cali, it was in Whittier, California.
Wait, so let me get this straight. He's sitting in a sunny studio in Southern California, thousands of miles away, 2 full years after the fact, painting a riot using photographs from the internet as visual references. Because I have to be honest, that feels incredibly detached. Like if you want to capture raw, bleeding political reality, doesn't retreating to a quiet studio thousands of miles away naturally sanitize the art?
It's a fair question.
It just feels like it risks turning a desperate life or death struggle into just a safe, atmospheric study of color.
And that is exactly the tension that critics wrestle with. Does physical distance dilute political urgency? But what's fascinating here is how the physical distance actually forces the raw political intention to submit to the syntax of visual art.
What do you mean?
When you are in California painting on thick paper, you aren't creating a direct moment-to-moment political document. If the artist wanted pure direct enunciation, plain photojournalism would have been the vastly superior tool.
Sure.
But the painting isn't divorced from reality because you cannot ignore the artist's emotional archive.
You mean his fieldwork?
Exactly. Yeah. Duke didn't just sit in California reading news articles. He physically traveled back to Colombia. Yeah. He went to Cali, which was the absolute undisputed epicenter of the protests. He walked through the most intense, heavily conflicted zones.
Wow.
We're talking Puerto Resistencia, Silloway, the Puente de los Mil Días, the Paso del Comercio.
And for anyone who doesn't know, places like Silloway aren't just random neighborhoods. They were highly marginalized areas that transformed into literal fortresses of social resistance during the uprising.
Exactly.
So he went to the exact places where the massive crowds had gathered.
He did. He spoke with the people who had been on the front lines, you know, the residents who were literally putting their physical bodies on the line against the riot police day after day.
Okay, so think about what happens when he finally returns to California then. When he stands in the solitude of his studio in Whittier 2 years later, that physical distance isn't an erasure of the politics. It's a processing period.
Yes.
Like when he pours that water onto the thick paper, that pigment is flowing heavy with the voices, the stories, and the trauma of Silloway and the Plaza de Bolivar.
The fieldwork anchors the painting to the lived experience of real people. The physical distance might take him out of the riot, but the emotional archive brings the riot directly into the studio.
That makes a lot of sense. The distance gives him the space to distill the chaos, rather than just mirror it.
Exactly.
And when you look at how he translated that emotional archive onto the paper, you arrive at what is undeniably the most arresting part of the entire image.
Oh, without a doubt.
We've talked about the dark, heavy riot police on the left and the light, diffuse crowd on the right. But right in the exact center of the painting, like right in the middle of the Plaza de Bolivar, there are ballerinas.
Yes, women in delicate tutus executing precise classical ballet movements right in the middle of the chaos, smoke, and water.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
You have the heavy, imposing neoclassical architecture of the Capitol building in the background.
Right.
You have the terrifying, robotic wall of police shields bearing down. And against all of that heavy, brutalist reality, you have the delicate, airy choreography of classical dance. It is incredibly jarring to look at.
It forces the viewer's eye to immediately stop. Technically, in terms of composition, the ballerinas are the undisputed focal point.
Yeah.
But contextually, their presence makes absolutely no sense in terms of riot tactics or street survival. They are a pure, unapologetic imposition of aesthetics into a zone of violence.
And if you look closely at one of the ballerinas, there is a tiny detail that completely changes the tone of the piece. She is holding a tiny black umbrella.
Yes.
Visually, it is just a minuscule, fragile stroke of dark paint compared to the massive stone columns of the Capitol or the armored, overlapping shields of the ES Med.
No, obviously, a fabric umbrella and a tulle tutu are not going to stop a tear gas canister.
Definitely not.
They certainly won't stop a rubber bullet or live ammunition. Physically, tactically, they're entirely useless. But the artist describes these ballerinas, and specifically that umbrella, as an ethical device.
An ethical device. So the little black umbrella isn't trying to be a physical shield against the state. It's a moral shield.
Precisely. By placing classical beauty in the direct line of fire, the art literally interposes itself against the violence. It disarms the aggressor on an ethical plane.
Wow.
It highlights the absolute monstrous absurdity of a state apparatus answering the language of art, a classical dance with the language of bullets and tear gas.
It weaponizes beauty.
It does. It shows that the aesthetic choice of dancing in a riot isn't a passive or naive act. It's a tremendous act of dissidence.
Right.
The art is confronting power not by attempting to match its brutality, which is impossible for an unarmed crowd anyway, but by imposing beauty upon it. It changes the rules of the engagement entirely.
So what does this all mean for the legacy of the protests? Did the ballerinas win?
Well,
because if this is an ethical device, if the aesthetic itself is the weapon, does focusing so heavily on the universal beauty of the painting risk stripping away its sharp political edge?
This raises an important question about what political art is actually supposed to do.
Right.
If this were a piece of blatant political propaganda art designed solely to push a specific agenda or rally a base, it would need to offer a clear, unambiguous victory. We would see the ballerinas somehow magically defeating the riot police, or the police fleeing the scene.
It would offer a neat resolution.
Exactly.
But we don't see that. The painting doesn't resolve the conflict for us.
Yeah.
It leaves the tension suspended right there in the water, just trapped in the fibers of the paper. There is no neat, triumphant ending painted for us to feel good about.
And that lack of resolution reflects the painful reality of 2021. The painting doesn't erase the pain. The young people who died at those intersections in Cali are still gone.
Yeah.
The artwork doesn't magically undo the profound trauma of the clash or pretend the violence didn't exact a terrible toll.
Even though the historical events did lead to a tangible real-world resolution.
Yes.
I mean, the social uprising of 2021 was a brutal inflection point that directly led to a massive democratic shift. The country voted to shift away from the right-wing repression associated with Uribismo to a new progressive leadership.
Right.
The art was active in accompanying that historical clamor for equality. So on one level, the painting is absolutely a historical record of that specific political shift.
It is a record, yes. But it achieves something far beyond just historical documentation. Critics describe the final effect of the painting as an uncomfortable beauty.
Uncomfortable because you, as the viewer, are finding deep aesthetic pleasure in a beautiful watercolor depiction of intense human suffering and political desperation.
Exactly. You are drawn in by the beauty of the watercolor blooms, only to realize you are staring at tear gas and riot shields. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the painting's true triumph is that it ultimately transcends strict localized politics.
How so?
It isn't just a document about the specific government of Colombia in 2021 or a specific tax reform. It speaks to a profound, universal human condition.
Right.
It reminds us that even in humanity's darkest, most violent, most oppressive moments, dignity endures. And sometimes that dignity takes the form of a defiant dance in the middle of a riot. The aesthetic itself is the resistance.
It manages to hold both truths at once. The symbolic cracks that the protesters opened in the streets of Cali and Bogota weren't just empty philosophy. They were pure, urgent, bleeding politics.
Yes.
But at the same time, the fragility of the paper and the uncontrollable water confronting that violence proves that beauty is a remarkably valid form of resistance.
It's a remarkable synthesis. The artwork manages to be an essential, grounded historical document of a specific, painful political struggle, while simultaneously elevating itself into a timeless testament to human fragility and resilience.
Which really brings it all home for you listening right now. Like, why should you care about a 15-inch watercolor of a protest in Bogota painted in a studio in California?
Right.
Because every single day we are all bombarded by harsh, rigid, overwhelming information. We see the news, we see the global conflicts, and reality can often feel like that dark, robotic wall of riot shields just bearing down on us. Jairo Duque's Arte en Resistencia teaches us a completely different way to process that overwhelming information. It suggests that sometimes the most powerful, enduring way to confront a rigid, brutal reality isn't with more rigidity.
Right.
It's with fluidity. It's with vulnerability. It's by trusting the uncontrollable water and imposing beauty where it shouldn't logically exist.
It invites you to look past the simple binary of winning and losing a political clash and instead asks you to look at the dignity of the human gesture itself.
And that leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over as we wrap up. This painting meticulously documents a very specific, painful moment in 2021 Colombia.
Yeah.
But that 640-gram arches, cold-pressed watercolor paper, that material, if kept well, can last for centuries.
Oh, easily.
Hundreds of years from now, long after the specific political factions and politicians of our current era are entirely forgotten by the general public, how will future viewers interpret those delicate dancing figures suspended in the water? Does art eventually swallow the history that created it, leaving only the beauty behind?
A fascinating question to carry with you.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. The next time you try to picture a brutal, unyielding conflict in the world, ask yourself what happens if you add water. We'll catch you next time.